It's such a good vibration. It's such a sweet sensation. You're such a hot temptation. It's such a sweet
sensation. Did you actually think I was going to play Flo Rida on this show? Seriously. I mean, you should know me better, huh? And look, I've said many times over the years, I was never a fan of Marky Mark growing up, but I'll take Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch's Good Vibrations over any recycled, rehashed, re-edited bullshit that this fucking Flo Rida does. Nothing personal against the guy, but I can't stand his music. So what's up, everyone? It is Sunday night, August 19, 2018. Welcome to your SummerSlam pay-per-view recap. I am Don Tony. And unfortunately, I'm riding solo. Here's the deal. Kevin Castle sent us an alert this afternoon. He was having computer problems. Even though the computer problems were fixed early on, and I saw him, he was online socializing during a pay-per-view, he asked me, look, you know, could you do it yourself? And I'll get into a couple of moments of SummerSlam on Monday's DTKC show. I'm like, sure, no problem. I like doing solo reports. So I'm up here solo on my own. You know, I appreciate when I get notified hours in advance so I can prepare accordingly. That's all I ask. So for everybody that is checking this out, keep in mind, I am recording this less than 5 minutes after SummerSlam went off the air. I don't know what's going to happen on Raw Monday night. I know a lot of you out there are still thinking back to the little troll job that I said I would love for WWE to do on Raw, and I talked about this on Breakfast Soup more than anywhere else. Brought this up over the last month, that they advertised early on Brock Lesnar was scheduled to appear on Raw the following night after SummerSlam. And I said, I came up with three scenarios. One would be Brock retaining at SummerSlam. The second one would be Roman Reigns winning and possibly Braun Strowman cashing in. But the third scenario that I loved more than anything was to have Roman Reigns win the belt at SummerSlam, let all the haters, including yours truly, let that soak in for 24 hours, let all the Roman Reigns fans have their orgasms tonight with the jit gel rags, you know, as long as you're of age. And Monday night, wouldn't it be something if Brock Lesnar showed up on Raw, invoked his rematch clause, and fucking won the belt back? Now, Braun Strowman could still cash in on Monday night. You know, when we, I don't want to jump ahead, but when we were at the main event match tonight, which was Reigns versus Lesnar, before the match started, Braun Strowman came out and he cut a promo saying, I don't do things behind people's back. I tell you to your face, I'm going to do blah, 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 blah. So basically told everyone that he was going to cash in and face whoever won the belt tonight right after the match is over. Problem is, Brock Lesnar got into it with Braun Strowman, and Braun Strowman couldn't handle the two chair shots and the F5, so we'll get into that a little later. Overall, I thought the pay-per-view was okay. You know, keep in mind that we had a six-hour event. You know, it's very draining. I mean, not only because I do Patreon as well, not only do you spend time setting up the contest, but you're preparing for the show, you're preparing for Monday's show, you're watching the paper, you're taking notes, you're making sure you get into every little detail that's possible, and then you have to go through 6 hours of this WWE event on top of it. So now here I am after all of this trying to have some energy still and give you a recap. So it's a very long, drawn-out day. And I know a lot of people's probably their immediate reaction at 11 o'clock at night Eastern Standard. They're tired, they're drained. Unless you were there live and in person, you might feel that the pay-per-view wasn't that great. I thought the pay-per-view was average. I mean, some of the matches, I had some fun with people online because I was throwing detailed predictions out all throughout the night with certain things. Even the Elias segment was pretty funny because, we'll get into that a little bit later. But I thought everything was designed for a purpose. And, you know, there's a lot of debate tonight regarding Ronda Rousey winning the women's title in the way that she did and Becky Lynch losing. I think the way they handled the match with Becky Lynch tonight was probably the best scenario possible. And I was debating people online, trying to convince people that what I thought was correct. But we'll get into that a little bit. First off, if any of you saw NXT TakeOver yesterday, how cool was that? Shout out to Alan and Sharon. They are loyal friends of the show, listeners of the show, patrons. And they told us a few days ago that they were going to NXT TakeOver and they were going to do some cosplay of the Don Tony and Kevin Castle show. Now, I will say this. I'm sorry for any other podcast out there with the exception of Wrestling Soup, because Wrestling Soup gets a boatload of signs also. But over the years, I don't think anybody can deny the fact that the most signs that you've ever seen for any one particular podcaster at WWE televised events has been yours truly. And the one thing that I've been saying for 13 plus years is that not only do our loyal family, because all of you are extended family, I don't just say that to panda to you, I really mean it. Even the ones that are tough on me at the chat room and YouTube and everything else, we're one family. It's always been one family since 1997 for yours truly and all of you. But I have said this for 13 years plus doing podcasts, that no other listener base spends the most money, gets the best tickets, and has the best seating at these events. And how cool was that yesterday? Everybody that watched TakeOver, if you don't like the Don Tony and Kevin Castle show, I wouldn't be surprised if you were trying to find boric acid to ingest by the time TakeOver was over. Not only did Sharon play an awesome Don Tony, I don't know if you realized it, I posted some photos on my Twitter, at Don Tony D. She not only dressed up as Don Tony, but she had a box of X-Lax with her, cigar, and fucking cannolis. I mean, how more creative and dedicated could you be than that? So, Sharon, if you're listening, I definitely want you, or I don't know if it's your husband or your boyfriend, I want you to PM me on Patreon. I have a bunch of Don Tony stuff coming your way, Sharon, as appreciation. That was so fucking cool, and I can't thank you enough. And what was even better about it is I was at the beach house yesterday with the parents, the girlfriend, and everything. Some of them don't watch wrestling. And they know I do the podcast, and my mom and my dad, they're like, why are you wasting time and all this stuff? And I turned it on, and I showed them, and my father's just standing there nodding his head left and right like, what the fuck am I seeing? Some woman sitting at ringside dressed up as my son. But it was great. It was awesome. Anyway, WWE SummerSlam 2018, the kickoff show, live from Brooklyn, New York at the Barclays Center. Your host for the pre-show was Sam Roberts, Renee Young, Booker T, and David Otunga. They also had Peter Rosenberg and JBL doing some additional segments. And we got to see Jerry Lawler, which was really, really cool, because Jerry Lawler, after the tragic death of his son, you know that getting around wrestling is probably therapeutic for him, just as it was for Natty. And I really, really loved the little gesture of Natty coming out wearing the Anvil's jacket from, I think, SummerSlam 1990. I think this week or next week is the anniversary of the Hart Foundation winning the tag titles against Demolition at SummerSlam. I think that's the event where she referenced the jacket tonight. You know, that's one thing about doing this week in wrestling history that's awesome, and I talk about it little drips and drabs on Twitter. You know, when you put in hard work and you do research and you read and you actually learn history and you do, you know, a lot of detail work in the projects that you do, it's not only hard work, but it's also, it expands your knowledge. It expands your memory. It stimulates the brain. It challenges you. And you'd be surprised how little things will come out and be like, oh, yeah, that's blah, 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 blah. So it was cool to see both of them tonight. So anyway, your three pre-show matches. And I know a lot of people were a little bit nitpicking, but I don't blame them this time around. All three pre-show matches all ended the same way, with roll-up pins. You had Zelina Vega getting the roll-up pin on Lana. You had Cedric Alexander getting a roll-up pin on Drew Gulak. I will get back to that match in a moment. I don't want anybody to get mad at me saying I'm just brushing you off like that. And you also had Curtis Axel with the roll-up pin on Dawson of the Revival. Now, I will tell you, with the exception of AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe tonight, my second favorite match on the whole pay-per-view was Cedric Alexander versus Drew Gulak. They knew they were working pre-show. They busted their ass. And I know that I have been very critical of Cedric Alexander over the last 2 years. I mean, how many times have you heard me say, every time I get the call, no one reacts to me at all. Every time I get the fall, no one reacts to me at all. Every time I get the call, am I annoying you yet? No one reacts to, well, he's been getting a reaction. I mean, let's be honest. It's not just tonight. He's been getting a reaction. But I got to tell you, they told such a wonderful story in that ring. And yes, I wanted Drew Gulak to win. On my predictions this week, I said Cedric Alexander is going to win. But I really wanted Drew Gulak to win. And people were like forcing me, like, hey, you got to pick a winner. I got to pick a winner. So I said, okay, fuck it, Drew Gulak. Because I want him to win. WWE does not want to pull the trigger of Drew Gulak being a cruiserweight champion. But that guy really deserves a little bit of a title run. And I'm a little nervous that this may be his high point as far as the cruiserweight division goes. But that match really told a wonderful story. And I know not everybody takes focus on Nigel McGuinness's commentary. But I really, if you paid close attention to his commentary during this match today, it made sense. It was common sense and logic in some areas, but even with some of the moves, he was explaining why this would lead to this. And it was just everything really gelled and flowed nicely. And I wrote this on Twitter early. I watched some of this pay-per-view early on with family, and some of them are not wrestling fans at all. And some of them were glued watching the back and forth between Gulak and Alexander. They really put on a great match tonight. And I honestly, as of right now, unless I'm forgetting a match, and if I forget and I realize it later, I'll correct myself. But as of right now, my immediate reaction is second favorite match of the night. You know, B-Team retaining over the Revival. I said what I said on Monday. They just changed the entrance music. And I know what some of you are going to say. And they're not going to keep belts on people simply because of entrance music. They want that chant. B-Team, B-Team, go, go, go. They want to get the crowd into it. And if they start losing over and over again, you're not going to get the crowd into it. So them retaining, I kind of thought, you know, that how could you look at it any other way? And as far as Lana and Rusev losing, you know, that could have been 50-50. I mean, all these matches are 50-50. Like I say many times before, you know, there's one thing about predicting a match correct. It's like flipping a coin. Heads, tails. Anybody could predict a match. You got 50-50 chance of being right. And you get into lots of little specifics and things like that. That's where it separates people's predictions. But I thought the pre-show was okay. You know, it was filler. But again, you're talking about a six-hour event, 2 hours on a pre-show. Pay-per-views used to be 2 hours. Now you get 2 hours on a pre-show. And that could be a little bit draining on people. So now with the pre-show matches out of the way, we start off the pay-per-view opening match. Seth Rollins with Dean Ambrose in his corner, winning the Intercontinental Championship over Dolph Ziggler with Drew McIntyre in his corner. Now, I don't think anybody would deny when I say that Dolph Ziggler and Seth Rollins really put on great matches with each other. I don't know exactly where this leaves Dolph Ziggler at this point. I am fine with Seth Rollins winning that title. I think what a lot of people thought during this match is, would Dean Ambrose turn on Seth Rollins? You had moments where people did interfere in the match on the outside. I don't want to say Dean Ambrose actually interfered. I think he was actually preventing things from happening more than anything else. But both people did get involved. It was a good match. I mean, if you actually check out other recaps out there, I don't think anybody is really going to talk about any particular moment that stood out, like a really unbelievable spot or anything like that. At one point, Seth Rollins had Dolph Ziggler up for a suplex. They both, you know, landed outside the ring, and they tried to start playing up that Seth Rollins may have injured his knee. But if you notice, you know, like a minute later, he was doing moves and the knee was fine. But it was a decent match. I mean, it went 20 minutes. Could the match have been a little shorter? Sure. But I don't think anybody would complain for an opening match. I think it was fine. Match ended. Drew McIntyre tried to get involved. Dean Ambrose, who had been knocked out earlier, recovered and hit dirty deeds onto McIntyre. Dolph Ziggler was trying to set up for a super kick, but was unsuccessful. Seth Rollins hit a really, really impressive looking curb stomp. The way the camera had it and the way it was executed couldn't have been any better. Dolph Ziggler loses to Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins is your new IC champion. After this match, we have a backstage segment. Renee Young interviewing AJ Styles. Nah. Samoa Joe. Nah. Roman Reigns. Nah. They're back. The fucking Bellas. So nice to see the Bellas, you know, doing their version of the Lex Express tour. You know, for the next couple of months, they're going to stop in all different areas, hyping up Evolution. Everybody says that Nikki Bella is the one that came up with the idea of Evolution, and now some people are saying it's going to be Nikki Bella versus Ronda Rousey at Evolution main event. I don't fucking buy that at all. That would be horrendous, all right? You want to really, you know, falsely inflate Nikki Bella's net worth in the ring on the food chain, go right ahead. By all means, if you're a fan of hers, if you appreciate her work, if she's an idol of yours, I totally respect that. But if you think that Nikki Bella is talented enough to main event the first ever goddamn women's pay-per-view, and who's been more supportive of that women's pay-per-view than yours truly? I've debated 99% of people online. Your talent's not strong enough. Matches are not going to be good. How are they going to sell this out? You're not only going to sell out, they're going to draw fine. They're going to do very, very well. You do not have Nikki Bella in the main event at fucking Evolution. Sorry, just my opinion. You know, but they were backstage, and one little remark that I got a kick out of. You had Renee Young ask the Bellas, any chance that you're going to step back in the ring for Evolution? And I think it was Nikki Bella that said, we're not here to be in the ring. We're here to have fun. Think about that for a minute. Being in the ring is not fun. I don't know if anybody caught that, but I caught it. And I was like, you know, yeah, that deserves a little bit of a ripping. So, but anyway, Bludgeon Brothers versus the New Day for the SmackDown tag titles. You know, decent match. Unfortunately, ended with a DQ. You had one spot that I just thought was really, really impressive. I mean, unfortunately, when you do a spot that looks absolutely tremendous, the person executing the move will sell it like they're dead. And that's what happened when Xavier Woods and Big E, who were the two participants in the match tonight, Kofi Kingston was at ringside. You had one part where Xavier Woods climbed up to the top rope and actually did an elbow drop to Luke Harper outside the ring. I mean, it really deserved the holy shit chant, and it was absolutely awesome. But because of that, he sold it like he was dead. So that left Big E in the ring, and then you had the Bludgeon Brothers start to get the upper advantage a little bit, and then you had Big E getting a little bit of an advantage, and then all of a sudden they take out those fucking rubber mallets and they start using it as a weapon and they get DQ'd. So you had the New Day get the official win, but they won by disqualification. Match went about 10 minutes. You know, it was okay. It really wasn't bad. They showed Jon Stewart in the crowd. I don't like him at all, but he is who he is. And I know some people out there enjoy him. Next match on the card was Braun Strowman versus Kevin Owens. Winner gets possession of the Money in the Bank briefcase. Now, if you've been following my shows for the last couple of weeks, I talked about this in detail, that this match just felt out of place in the feud between Kevin Owens and Braun Strowman. When, you know, you look over the years with feuds, you start off with a regular match, then you add a stipulation, and then the final match may be a cage match, you know, anything goes, no DQ, some big stipulation. And then that's it. The feud carries on to something else. So you already have the cage match, and yes, it ended abruptly with Kevin Owens going off the top of the cage, but you then go from that to the briefcase. And it kind of felt like, and I said this 2 weeks ago, it felt like, okay, we have nothing for Braun Strowman or Kevin Owens on his pay-per-view, so, you know, let's put them in one more match, and let's, you know, make it interesting. So we'll put the briefcase on the line. And the briefcase really on the line just to try to hide the fact that this feud should have already been over. But we'll put the briefcase on the line to try to cloud that a little bit. But in the end, Braun Strowman will still keep the briefcase. And you'll be like, ah, that kind of sucks. Like, what was the whole purpose of this match? You know why I still believe that what I said a couple of weeks ago was spot on? Because think of the stipulation of this match. That Braun Strowman could have gotten disqualified. And Kevin Owens could have gotten the briefcase. Now, over the years, when you have stipulations that somebody could lose the title on a disqualification, somebody could lose a title because of whatever, during the match you tease that actual stipulation. Over the years, we've seen a match like, oh, if this person gets DQ'd, he could lose the title. So what does the person do? He does something that almost gets him DQ'd, and then he stops in his tracks. And they tease that, holy shit, you know, he might get disqualified. They didn't do that once. They didn't do that once. I mean, come on, pick up a chair, pick up the briefcase, bring it in the ring. Let the commentators tease. If he uses it, he's going to lose his briefcase. If he, let the referee tease it. You get disqualified. You're going to lose it. You're going to lose it. Let Kevin Owens set something up like he acts like he got hit with a chair and he's laying on the floor with the chair and the referee thinks, you know, like, Braun, did you hit him? And the crowd would be like, no, come on. You don't do that once. What the fuck did you have that stipulation for then? That was ridiculous. And you know what was funny? For most of the night tonight on Wiki, when they posted the match results and the times in the matches, when it came to Braun Strowman versus Kevin Owens, the match time that they wrote was pretty fast. And it really was. And it was sad because I tweeted something later on, which unfortunately ended up being true. I tweeted a few things today, but when it came to Finn Balor, I think you know what I'm talking about if you follow me on Twitter. So anyway, yeah, Braun Strowman keeping a briefcase. This happened early on. So right away, everybody, including me, is thinking, okay, he's going to cash in later on in the night. So now we have Carmella versus Charlotte versus Becky Lynch for the SmackDown Women's title. And, you know, the match was average, nothing spectacular. I mean, I know, you know, people think Carmella, like I said, she screams, she taunts, she moonwalks, she dodges, but you know, is she great in the ring? No, not at all. And you got Charlotte going, you know, from regular speed to slow speed, try to make this a little bit more believable. And unfortunately, you had Becky, who a lot of people were behind this entire match, being the victim of it. You know, she gets thrown into, she does a move, this breaks it up, and it took a lot of focus off of Becky. But I've been saying this online, arguing with people, and I absolutely love the way this match ended. I loved it, and I'll tell you why. The outcome of the match was Charlotte winning the women's title over Carmella and Becky Lynch. The crowd was booing the shit out of Charlotte. Crowd did not like the outcome at all. They wanted Becky to win. They were all chanting for Becky, and the crowd let Charlotte have it after. So after the match is over, they're hugging in the ring. Charlotte has her hand over her eyes to hide a little bit of the tears, and she's talking to Becky and, you know, probably sending her some legit appreciation as far as, you know, the match tonight and everything. But I loved it, and I'll tell you why. Right after Becky turns on Charlotte, starts beating her up, crowd is chanting, yes, 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 with the exception of Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose getting pops tonight. I think, arguably, she got, you know, one of the biggest pops also. As far as the women, she got the biggest pop, in my opinion. Ronda Rousey got a huge pop as well, but if you pay close attention when she won that title, look at the crowd. I'm not saying this, and believe me, when you hear me give the recap for Ronda Rousey, I thought the match was excellent and needed to be done that way. But if you actually look at the crowd reaction right after, arguably, Becky Lynch got a bigger pop. But anyway, so Becky, I didn't like how the commentators were treating it as Becky Lynch kind of turning heel. In my opinion, you have, you know, Charlotte be the heel in this feud. A lot of people will say that Charlotte is much better as a heel than a babyface. And let Becky Lynch be the babyface, but be one of these edgy babyfaces with a real big attitude. That's what I want to see. But for everybody out there that really hated the fact that Becky didn't win tonight, I ask you this question. And I want you to really think about it. And I honestly think just about everybody out there will agree with me 100% as long as the finish of my question happens. And what I ask you is, would you rather have had Becky Lynch win the title tonight at SummerSlam? Just have her win tonight. Or would you rather have her lose, turn on Charlotte, beat the fuck out of her, get a little bit of attitude, chase Charlotte for a month, and then win the title? Now, I think almost 100% of you out there will say to me, you know what? I'd rather have that as long as she wins the title. It would really suck if she chases her for a month and then doesn't win. I think I would rather have that scenario. I know I would rather have that scenario. And that's why I really love this outcome tonight. I think WWE knew that the crowd would have really popped big time for Becky to get. I just didn't like the crying again. You know, I totally understand, you know, we treat women equally in this and that, but, you know, why is it that the women always crying after outcomes of matches, you know? I mean, it wasn't Tom Hanks. There's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in wrestling. Why are they always crying? They win, they cry. They lose, they cry. Stop with the fucking crying. You know, get mad. Get angry. Look a little disappointed. You don't have to fucking cry every time. Just my opinion. I don't know if you agree. It's not a sexist thing or not. I'm just saying, with the women's division, there's an awful lot of crying. Anyway, next match on the card, AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe for the WWE Championship. Samoa Joe winning by DQ. Now, for a few weeks now, I've been saying I want Samoa Joe to get that belt. You know, AJ Styles is now the longest reigning SmackDown champ of all time. He's been banged up a little bit. He's been the workhorse of WWE. Give him some time off. Give the belt to Samoa Joe. It did not happen tonight. If it happens in a few weeks, I'm fine with it. I thought tonight was about telling a story, and I thought it was great because you know this feud is going to continue. Now, just to basically summarize it, before the match started, we saw AJ Styles' wife, Wendy, at ringside, along with their young daughter. I don't know how she is, four, I'm not sure, it's five. But anyway, Samoa Joe cuts a promo telling his wife, you know, that daddy will be coming home tonight. And he tells AJ his family was there to see Samoa Joe kick his ass, blah, 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 blah. They fight. Now, you can't compare it to TNA matches of yesteryear because they're younger. Most matches might have been more at a rapid pace, but this match was my favorite of the night. Told a really good story. They both work beautifully in the ring. Anybody that has been following their careers will say that 1,000 times over. They showed that they have, you know, even though at their ages now, they can still perform at a high level. Some of the kicks that Joe was hitting, Styles hitting the backbreaker onto the knee, the Styles class scared the shit out of me for a moment. Right after it was hit, I looked at social media to see what other people's reactions were. Maybe it was just me, but other people, yeah, they were like, you know, did Samoa Joe just hit his head? You know, look like something. I mean, AJ Styles only got his leg wrapped around one of Samoa Joe's arms. Hit the Styles clash, Samoa Joe's head looked like it came awfully close. That would have been scary, especially when you think about the fact of how much weight Samoa Joe's has on his body. But looks like he was okay, thank God. They brawl in the ring, outside the ring. Basically, the end of the match, what happens is you have Samoa Joe get on the mic once again, cutting a promo on AJ Styles towards his wife, Wendy, telling Wendy that AJ Styles would not be coming home at all tonight, and he tells his little daughter that Samoa Joe would be her new daddy. AJ Styles snaps, launches from the broadcast table onto Samoa Joe through a barricade. AJ Styles grabs a chair, starts chair bashing. I think the timekeeper chair bashes Samoa Joe. They call for the DQ. AJ Styles is looking at his hand. He's touching his forehead. He sees that he's bleeding, hits more chair shots. And, you know, they keep focusing on AJ's wife. AJ goes toward, is shown at ringside looking at his wife. And you see his wife saying, stop, enough. So AJ Styles walks up to his wife. They're, you know, looking at each other. And at one point, AJ Styles picks up his daughter. And his daughter says something like, Daddy, you're bleeding. And she got scared and went back to her mother. And then AJ Styles, his wife, and his daughter walked from the side area towards the locker room. And that's basically how it ended. Crowd liked it. Had no problem with the DQ finish. And like I said, this is going to continue. So next we got Elias in the ring. And as I've talked about on social media, if you don't know by now, his concert, Gramercy Theater, was canceled. Now, I got wind of this before it was even made public, and I wrote about it online. You know, shame on WWE to wait so long. In fact, you know, it was fucked up, and you could look at my Twitter as a witness. About 6 to 8 hours after this concert was canceled, WWE sent me a goddamn email saying, don't forget, tomorrow, Elias, Gramercy Theater. Shame on Live Nation for not fucking posting it right away as well. What happened was I got an email from a friend of mine that actually works in the city that knows someone that works, you know, within Gramercy. And he says, hey, dude, I just want to let you know that concert is canceled. I know it's not mentioned online, but it's canceled. Now, I know this person a long time, and there would be no reason for him to lie to me. So he said, are you sure? So I contact Ticketmaster, and Ticketmaster, you know, they're checking. They still see it listed, this and that. And then this woman on the phone, she's like, oh, I think it is canceled. So I go on social media. I post it right away. Matarazzo out there. Oh, I don't see it anywhere else. And then Elias writes on his social media that WWE forced him to cancel the concert. So the concert didn't happen. Now, for everybody out there that's going to ask why did it cancel, you know, contrary to what Kev and some other people said, it was not standing room only. All right, yes, they do have events that are standing room only, but as I told everybody hours before that it was made public, WWE wanted to record this. WWE wanted to document this concert. The tickets did not sell well. And Gramercy Theater is already small. I posted a screenshot online of what that place looks like with the chair set up. And the problem is that WWE, with all due respect, this is nothing against Elias in any way, shape, or form, but you have SummerSlam weekend. You have all of these autographs. So I don't think anybody out there realizes how many appearances WWE had this weekend. I'm talking over a dozen. And they're charging premium money to meet people, greet people, you know, whatever. And now you're asking fans to travel all the way to New York City to spend between $40 and $60 to see Elias per person. You don't even, I didn't even include taxes or transportation. Anybody that lives outside of New York, you have no idea. You could spend $50 just in transportation if you take cab or if you take whatever. And who the fuck is going to spend that kind of money for 2, 3, 4 people to see Elias on stage for 1 hour with no instruments, no storylines, no swerves, no nothing? Elias is entertaining. But if you're going to have SummerSlam weekend and all these other appearances going on and all this other stuff, you know, people have to start picking and choosing. I know New York has a little bit more, you know, of a standard of living or income than other states, but people are not going to dump that kind of money. And the tickets did not sell anywhere near as well as WWE expected. And as a result, they didn't want that visual of recording the concert, documenting the concert, and having a poor ticket. You know, showing. And, you know, look, they're going to spin it. You know, they're going to try to blame it. They're just hoping it goes away. And there'll be other people out there that will try to, like, cover it up. And this, but that's just the facts. That's just the facts, and I got it straight from the source. So Elias did not take place. So now we're wondering, okay, they're going to save Elias for SummerSlam. Maybe we'll have something really cool. Maybe The Rock will show up. Maybe this will happen. Maybe that happened. This is what happened when we got with Elias today. Elias is in the ring. He's got a guitar. He's cutting his usual promo with the crowd. And keep in mind, yours truly is a huge fan of Elias. When other people thought he was being buried, what did I say before WrestleMania? Everyone, relax. They're not going to blow their load with Elias before WrestleMania. Let WrestleMania take place, and then you'll see the elevation of Elias. And that's exactly what you got. I am a huge fan of Elias. But what they gave tonight, he's in the ring. He's got his guitar. He's bad-mouthing the crowd, as he always does. The crowd loves it, eats it up. He's about to perform. And you see him grab the side of his guitar, a little bit more pressure than usual. And lo and behold, snap, the guitar breaks in half. So those that did not see it up close on TV, they thought, you fucked up, you fucked up, you fucked up. Elias is shown pissed off. His guitar is broken. He can't perform. He's kicking chairs. This is that. And that was it. That was it. So now we're thinking, all right, maybe he'll come out later with a different guitar and maybe something else unfortunate will happen. As long as Bobby Lashley doesn't come out, because we don't want that. So that's what most of us are thinking at this particular point. So now we get Daniel Bryan versus The Miz. And Maryse is shown at ringside with the baby and the baby carriage. You know, I don't know why you would have a baby with a baby carriage with loud music and everything like that at ringside, but who knows? Maybe the baby wasn't even in the carriage. I don't know. But it was cool to see her. She looks beautiful as always, had the baby, no signs of, you know, any, you know, weight gain from the baby, which, you know, look, I'm not sexist like that. I think Nia Jax and some bigger women are just as beautiful, if not sometimes beautiful, than others because they don't need makeup. They could show their beauty. I just know a lot of women, when they have children, they are very, very paranoid of baby weight after they give birth. So it's not a physical thing, but you just know that some people out there, especially when you have a good physique to yourself, you don't even have to be a celebrity. You know, you just want to make sure that you don't gain the weight. That's just the way it is. It's, you know, the human emotion of a lot of people out there. She looked wonderful. So anyway, match takes place. Told a good story. You know, Daniel Bryan in the beginning throwing a flurry and everything made sense because it felt like he was getting his anger out for all these years of building up, and that's way the way it should have been. Match back and forth, you know, fans chanting Daniel Bryan, fans also chanting Let's Go Miz. I was very surprised at the number of people out there that thought Daniel Bryan was winning this match. Daniel Bryan, you know, this match could still take place at WrestleMania. It could be a mixed tag match for all we know. But after all of these years of buildup, it just felt like something was missing. I don't know what, but the promos that they did leading up to this match all made sense. They did their job. I had no problem with any of it. Still, it felt like something was lacking. Maybe there should have been a little bit. You know what I think it is? And I actually pointed this out a few months ago. You had the storyline that Daniel Bryan stepped down as, you know, as far as part of the SmackDown authority because he was going to be a wrestler again. And one of the things he last requested was to bring The Miz over to SmackDown so he could, you know, make his life miserable. And then for the next bunch of months, you know, you have Miz performing on SmackDown, and there's no interaction with him and Daniel Bryan at all. None. And you would have thought in storyline, Daniel Bryan would have done everything possible to make The Miz's life miserable. All right. And it just like lacked. It felt like that they forgot about each other. And I remember going on one of my episodes and I said, it went out there. You notice like nothing's going on. And people, oh, just give it time, give it time. It's not about giving time. You know, when you have that much quote unquote anger for someone in storyline to the point where you draft them to your brand and then you do virtually nothing. All right. Now I know what some of you are going to say. Well, he wasn't SmackDown authority anymore. So how could he torment Miz? There's a lot of ways, you know, interfering in matches, showing up, beating them up, jumping through the crowd. Blah, 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 blah. There's a lot of different ways. Mind games, you know, cutting these little promos. It just felt like that empty space between the time that Daniel Bryan returned to the ring and now, I think caused damage to that storyline. But they did perform great in the ring today. The match was fine. Miz defeats Daniel Bryan. The match went over 20 minutes as well. And how the match ended was Miz goes up to Maryse. They claim that Maryse gave Miz some type of a foreign object, maybe brass knucks. We didn't see it. Miz punches Daniel Bryan in the head. Daniel Bryan's running to the ropes. Miz connects, hits him in the head. Daniel Bryan's knocked out. Miz gives back to Maryse whatever he, quote unquote, she gave him in the first place. She shoves it in her, I guess, her bra or something. Was there actually something? It's probably just rolled up tape or something. But anyway, he gets the pin, 1, 2, 3. Miz is your winner. Now, they start hyping up an event that's going to take place in Melbourne, Australia. All right, it's going to happen on October 6th, Saturday, at the Melbourne Cricket Ground. It's called the Super Show, WWE Super Show, Melbourne, Australia. Now, they didn't give you any start time or anything else, but the big hype for tonight was the fact that Triple H versus The Undertaker is going to take place at this event for the very last time. After this event, no more ever Triple H versus Undertaker. Now, I did a little bit of research for those that are curious, because I know a majority of listeners live in the United States. I know we have a huge audience in England, and we do have a big audience in Australia as well, but this is directed towards my American listeners and friends, because Australia, you already know when this is happening, or maybe you don't. I'm going to give you the info now. From my research, this WWE Super Show that's going to take place in Melbourne, Australia, is going to happen on Saturday, October 6th at 6 p.m. Australia time. So what that means here in New York, if it's 6 p.m. Saturday night in Australia, that means it's 4 a.m. here in New York Saturday morning. So if you want to watch this Australia event, because this is a global pay-per-view, they are treating it as a pay-per-view event. You know, it's the network, so is it really pay-per-view? But they are treating it as a big-time event. So if you want to catch it live and you live on the East Coast like me, you have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. So how we're going to handle it on Patreon, I have no idea. Shout out to our patrons as always. We'll figure it out like we always do, and we'll have some fun with it. So they hyped that up today. Next match, Finn Balor versus Baron Corbin. Baron Corbin comes out first, and we got a surprise. We start hearing the demon entrance. So people immediately realize, holy fucking shit, he's coming out as the demon. It's about time. Now, forget about people saying, you saved demon for Baron Corbin. I don't care. It was cool to see it back. But if anybody followed me on Twitter, as soon as you heard that couple of seconds of the demon intro, what I wrote online was, wow, this is cool, was getting Demon Balor again. I just hope this match is longer than Kevin Owens, Braun Strowman's pretty fast, because that match only went a couple of minutes. I was very, very concerned that Finn Balor coming out as the demon get up was to cover up the fact that this match was only going to go about 2 minutes. And I wrote that online, and 2 minutes later, I was unfortunately correct. So right away, people are like, hey, why are you bringing the demon out there, 90-second match? Because you know what? Even though it was only 90 seconds, the crowd loved the fact that the demon came out. And the makeup job is wonderful as always. So you look at the match, only went 90 seconds. You don't see anybody really complaining at ringside, because this is all about entertainment, not just in-ring, you know, action, you know, rating it on stars or whatever you do. This is not cheap shot towards anybody. I'm just saying, there's aspects of entertainment involved as well. So now we got Nakamura versus Jeff Hardy for the U.S. title. Match shockingly went 11 minutes. I don't know how. It felt very one-sided. I mean, Jeff Hardy did get offense on this match. Don't get me wrong. He hit the Twist of Fate, hit the Swanton Bomb. There was one point where he tried to hit the Swanton Bomb. Let me just paint this for you. Nakamura is out, laid out on the ring, but on the outside of the ring area, like on the edge of the ring apron, you know, so Jeff Hardy climbs not only to the top rope, but to that metal post, climbs up there, and he's going to try to do a Swanton Bomb off of that onto Nakamura, who's laid out on the edge of the ring apron. Sure enough, Nakamura moves. Matt Hardy hits the edge of the ring apron, and it looked pretty, it just looked painful. So now, you know, the match is about to end. Nakamura hits a couple of kicks. Jeff Hardy gets no return offense, and Nakamura gets your pin, 1-2-3. After the match, Randy Orton comes out. This was pretty funny. Comes out, looks at both of them, and then just walks to the back. He was out there for about, 10 seconds, 15 seconds. It was pretty funny. People were left like, why are you coming out? So now we got Alexa Bliss versus Ronda Rousey for the women's title. You don't have Mickie James or Alicia Fox or anybody with Alexa Bliss. She's out there by herself. Ronda Rousey is with Natty. Natty comes out first, gets a big pop from the crowd. Very, very emotional because of the Anvil's passing, and the crowd was really, really good to her. It was good tonight not to see any swerves or anything else. Now, the Bellas are sitting at ringside. They had mentioned before the pay-per-view that they were going to be sitting at ringside during this match. You know, look, I have nothing personal against the Bellas, but having them all over this fucking TV because of this Evolution event is a little bit nauseating for me. But you have them at ringside, you know, they almost look like the Iconics standing there, to be honest with you. But they're at ringside, Alexa Bliss is out there, then Natty, then Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey having the face paint on, some people thinking that she looked a little bit like Bertha Faye. Match was very one-sided. Ronda Rousey dominated Alexa Bliss the whole match. Won the women's title in 4 minutes. No turns, no swerves. Some people were really fearing that Nikki Bella would get involved in this match, which would lead to Nikki Bella versus Ronda Rousey at Evolution, which I don't want to see, like I said earlier. But she won the title. You know, after the match was over, she jumped at ringside, jumped into the first row onto the arms of her husband. And, you know, it was just a really, really good moment. Now, I saw people immediately online, a lot of people writing, how ridiculous is this? You have Alexa Bliss. She's the women's champion. What does this say about the regular women? Just have Ronda Rousey dominate her in this fashion set. Let me explain something to all of you that feel that way. Ronda Rousey got so much press the last pay-per-view she worked for WWE. Do you realize how much publicity is going to take place tonight and tomorrow because Ronda Rousey won the WWE Women's Championship? Sure, it is entertainment. Sure, it is predetermined. Nobody is arguing that. But the amount of press that they're going to get, you want to portray Ronda Rousey, any press that's directed this way, you want to show her dominant. You don't want any swerves or turns or attacks from anyone else. You don't want to take anything away from Ronda Rousey winning that title at SummerSlam. Do you want to do something tomorrow on Raw? Absolutely. No problem whatsoever. But as far as this title win goes, dominating Alexa Bliss, no interference, no swerves, no attacks after, this was the way to do it, in my opinion. Needed to be lopsided. Anyone out there that has a problem with it, I respectfully disagree with you. I think this was the only way to go. Without question, the only way to go. So that leads us to your main event. Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns for the WWE Universal title. Now, I've said for a very long time that WWE waited way too long to do this storyline the way they did with Brock Lesnar not giving a shit, Roman Reigns being the worker. I know they tried to do it a little at WrestleMania, but didn't do well at all. And what I've been saying for the longest time is that Roman Reigns is the lesser of two evils. All right. And it was funny because I know that there are a lot of people out there who are big time Roman Reigns fans. I mean, really big Roman Reigns fans that waited months, weeks, days, minutes, seconds for this moment tonight. So when Roman Reigns' music hit, that he would get a tremendous pop from the Brooklyn fans so they can run on social media and say, ha, you see, he's over. Welcome to reality. Welcome to Brooklyn. Welcome to the real world. That did not happen. The fans were not happy with Brock Lesnar either. When the fans chanted, you both suck, that is something that I have said on Don Tony and Kevin Castle's show a few times this year, that you're not going to get Roman Reigns tremendously over and Brock Lesnar tremendously booed in any match anywhere. Maybe in Saudi Arabia when they don't follow either one of them, but you ain't getting it anywhere. If anything, you're going to get the fans against both of them. That's pretty much how it felt tonight. Roman Reigns was the lesser of two evils. Does Roman Reigns deserve the heavyweight title? I don't know. He does work every week. He's a workhorse. He has his matches. I defended him on the last episode of Breakfast Soup, and I said he is a star for WWE. Even though I'm not a fan of his, even though I can't stand his work, I have said on this show since the beginning of the year that it was a smoke and mirrors tour. I mean, I know it pisses people off when I keep reminding you things, but since WrestleMania, I have said at least 10 times on these shows where to the point where Kev Castle has said to me, hey, DT, I remember you said all this year, smoke and mirrors tour. WWE was never going to de-push Roman Reigns. I've said that forever. All they were doing was taking a scenic route from point A to point B. And point B was Roman Reigns as your heavyweight champion. And that's what you got tonight. I don't know what's going to happen on Raw tomorrow. By the time most of you hear this, Raw was already off the air. I would fucking love in a perfect world just to swerve people and piss people off. I would love for Brock Lesnar to invoke his rematch clause, defeat Roman Reigns, get that belt back. Hell, I'd even be happy with Brock Lesnar getting the title back on Raw, then have Braun Strowman cash in and have Raw end with Braun Strowman as the heavyweight champion. I would fucking love that as well. But this is basically what you got. Now, this match only went 6 minutes. When the match started, I think it was 10:56 p.m., and as soon as the bell hit, you had Roman Reigns hitting his Superman punch over and over and over again. And it looked for a moment that Roman Reigns was going to win this match within a minute. Got it upper an advantage immediately. But just as when he's about to hit the spear onto Brock Lesnar reversed it and turned it into a guillotine choke. Roman Reigns would get his strength, pick up Brock Lesnar while Brock Lesnar had the guillotine choke on him and would slam him down to break the hold. Moments later, same thing happened again. Guillotine choke. Roman Reigns picks him up, throws him down, breaks the hold again. This is where the crowd starts chanting, "You both suck." Roman Reigns goes for his spear onto Brock Lesnar, who moved. This caused Roman Reigns to dive outside the ring onto Braun Strowman. So now you got Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns laid out outside the ring. Brock Lesnar goes outside and then decides to give Braun Strowman the F5. So now people are starting to think, okay, this attack on Braun Strowman is designed so he will be knocked out and won't be cashing in. This sucks. I think a lot of people started feeling that way. Brock Lesnar grabs the Money in a Bank briefcase, hits Braun Strowman with it a few times, then tosses it all the way to the back of the rampway. I guess maybe you need to hold the briefcase in order to cash it in. And it even looked like the briefcase might have broke as it hit the wall. It was pretty funny. But Brock Lesnar picks up a chair, hits Strowman a couple of more times, and makes sure that Braun Strowman is too incapacitated to cash in tonight. All of a sudden, Brock Lesnar returns to the ring. Brock Lesnar turns around. Roman Reigns hits the spear, gets the pin. 1, 2, 3. And that's pretty much it. That's how you went off the air. Braun Strowman did not cash in. Obviously, something is going to happen on Raw. We don't know what it is. Maybe the scenario I came up with will happen. Maybe it won't. But that is your SummerSlam recap. On a scale of 1 to 10, I give the pay-per-view a 6. You know, there really weren't any horrible matches. Braun Strowman versus Kevin Owens was very disappointing. I think there's no way else to put that. Charlotte versus Becky Lynch versus Carmella, although the match itself wasn't all that great, the outcome and the way they did it, I thought was perfect for this to continue. Again, as long as Becky Lynch wins the title in the long run. I enjoyed Seth Rollins winning the title back from Dolph Ziggler. I don't know exactly where this leaves Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre now. Do they have a split because of this? I don't know. But, Seth Rollins winning the title back is very interesting. You know, even though Dean Ambrose did not turn on this pay-per-view, maybe Dean Ambrose now wants to challenge Seth Rollins for that championship. So we'll see what happens with that. I thought their match was excellent. I mean, look, let's be honest. Seth Rollins and Dolph Ziggler put on great matches with each other. So I don't think anybody thought that there wasn't going to be a good match. Yes, it was the opening match tonight, but why not? Have the fucking pay-per-view start off with a bang. So, you know, it was okay. You know, is it going to be one of those real memorable SummerSlams? I'm not sure. But some of the matches I enjoyed tremendously. And again, I have to give major props to Cedric Alexander and Drew Gulak because they really had a really nice match. I just enjoyed it. For a pre-show, it was one of the best pre-show matches I've ever seen. Tell me what you think. Follow me on Twitter at DonTonyD. The website, DonTony.com. Email me, DonTony@DonTony.com. Facebook.com/DTKC Show. And as always, if you like what we do, you want to support the shows, help us keep these free for everyone, keep the bills paid, and in return, get a boatload of Patreon-exclusive content, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/DonTony. Hundreds of hours of Breakfast Soup. Mish and I are going to be recording a new episode this Wednesday. Kev Castle just did his latest solo installment of Castle Chronicles. You also have giveaways, and we will be doing your next pay-per-view predictions contest, which will be taking place, I believe, September 16th. Was it Hell in a Cell? I think it might be Hell in a Cell. So anyway, everyone, take care, be well, and I'll catch you all soon. Ciao.
Support the Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle Show on Patreon. Get access to thousands of hours of back episodes. Get bonus episodes
and exclusive shows. Castle Chronicles.
Breakfast Soup.
Pay-per-view recaps. DVDs.
Beer koozies. Tattoos.
And more.
Support the show that's entertained millions for over 16 years. Patreon.com/DonTony. Once again, Patreon.com/DonTony.